What the world needs today more than anything, I think, is artistry. You know, people being genuine artists. When I look at my kids and the culture they're growing up in, I just want to see more artists going after their dreams, creating beauty, creating joy, creating music. Yeah. Just create stuff, man. That's why we're here on this planet, to create, right? Uh-huh. So today we're talking with Megan McKenna. She's an artist, an actress. She's really stepping into her own, and we're talking to her about the transformation her life into becoming a genuine artist. Really beautiful conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for tuning in to In the Chair with Bear. Here with Megan McKenna.
Megan. M-E-A-G-A-N.
And you say Megan.
Megan.
Like, I always mess up everyone's name.
Like the month of May. Don't be a people pleaser.
I am. You already know that about me. I'm trying to get out of that, though.
Yeah.
I'm trying to stop doing that. Megan McKenna.
Megan McKenna.
And you're an actress, and you're just now kind of in several projects all at the same time, right?
I had this chick read my chart a while ago, and she told me that the month of March 2023, like, everything was really gonna just take off. And it's just so interesting how things have already just happened in the last, like, 2 weeks of my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what are you most excited about right now?
I mean, the final vow with Mauricio Mendoza. Like, I mean, he's just an incredible force. He's genuine as a human. He is kind. And his wife is a badass too, Yennefer Behrens. And they just took me under their wing. And after we wrapped, they really, like, guided me and mentored me.
That's awesome.
So that's about to come out.
That's about to come out. And you've already done with the filming and everything. And it's
yeah, so we wrapped like a year and a few months ago.
That's exciting.
They showed it in Boston at the AMC in Boston. Like, they put it in the film festival circuit. And so hopefully, you know, in the next month it's here.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. It's
wow.
Very exciting.
And so that it's called The Final Vow?
The Final Vow.
Oh, okay. And then what did you play in that?
So I played Tiffany, and I got to really have like this duality of character, which was this like affluent woman that goes to adopt a Mexican teenager from an orphanage in Rosarito.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so I did that, and then the character finds her way towards wanting to be corrupt, and so I traffic my teenager that I adopt.
Oh my
gosh.
Sell
her.
That's crazy.
While I'm like humming. And like the federales are like pulling her out of the car. And I'm like looking in the rearview mirror like. I mean, it's just so fun. It's one of those things that really, the experience was fun, first of all, because it's like a resurgence of my career, right? It's like my first big feature film, my first big role. And getting to work with people who are working all the time is just such an honor, you know? And for the director, Ruben Eastlis, to trust that I could just play with the character and bring it to life, he's like, do that thing you're just doing, you know? Was just such a freaking gift.
Do you get, like, so when you get in character, you were saying you're more of a method actress.
I prefer if someone's willing to be that with me, like, especially in an intimate way on set, because it makes the feeling more safe on set for me, personally.
Right. And do you get that sense, like, when you're on set or in this scene, like, with your 13-year-old adopted daughter, or I don't know how old
yeah.
she was, but
yeah, she was.
Yeah, that you have that kind of feel, like this sort of
nurturing,
yeah.
motherly turn, like sadistic.
I mean, that sounds a little scary.
Yeah, 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 and that's why it was a moment where I just felt like what I was doing, I didn't need to use the words that were in the script. So I kind of just like started to hum and let the moment play out. Mm. And at first I think the director was probably like, what is she doing? But then he let it play out, and he's a real actor's director, which is fantastic. And then I got to just dive in the way that I felt was what served the story.
So how long would you film a project like that? Like, how long are you actually?
So that, like, the whole thing, depending on what role I am, I mean, they filmed for like a month and a half, and I was only on set for 4 days.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah. It was like really easy. I mean, the hardest part actually about being on location is the first night you're so excited and so adrenaline up that you cannot fucking sleep. I look forward to the days when I can still have that adrenaline, but I can sleep. You know?
Yeah.
Because you literally, at 6 a.m., you're about to pass out.
Wow.
And it's not even like, do I know my lines? It's you're just so excited for them to say action and for you to live and...
Are you nervous about it, or are you? Is it like?
Oh, it's a combination.
You're nervous, excited, nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's who is it that says it? Some big sports guy says it. My husband's told me about him. He's obsessed with him. It's not LeBron James, but maybe it's Magic Johnson who says make everything a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I really am like that. I'm an all or nothing person. So like. If I'm going to lose a couple days of sleep so that I'm going to make sure I'm going to make it a masterpiece and like be all cracked out on the set exactly how I need to be so my emotions are fully alive and fully available, then I'm going to do it. You know, I go off the deep end.
Go a little off the deep end.
Like, I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse, and Ron Stetson, who was taught by Sandy Meisner, you know, the greatest of the great, one of, he told him, you know, that you really need to, like, be assaulted by your senses as an actor. So you need to be willing to have that happen to you. And so when I dive into character, I want to make sure that, like, as crazy as it sounds, right, is that, as like, there is no... The most important thing is the character and not me.
There is no Megan anymore.
No, there is no Megan. And so I'm learning that process of keeping that connection safe, and it's sacred, and like you gotta kind of protect yourself, because there's a lot of actors out there who will fuck your shit up quick if they can. So if you are not well trained,
what does that mean? They'll get you out of character by...
No.
Or...
No, they will...
They'll take it to another level or something.
No, they'll try to act as though it's like a game and not be respectful of the craft.
I see.
And play too much on set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about playing on set. It's about doing your fucking job and doing it and making it a masterpiece. Like, for me, that's mm-hmm. I'm like... all in. So when somebody says you book the role, even if it's a commercial, I'm like, all in. And if they let me know that I can have some fun, that's great. But I always want to go in super professional.
Right.
Because I've made a lot of green mistakes, you know?
Okay, so
what were they?
You brought some of that up. Yeah, what's...
Yeah.
Give me a mistake.
So, I mean, my first agent, you know, I was like, probably similar to how I was with my husband when we first met, I was like, made myself way too available. And like, I'm such an all or nothing person. I didn't know what playing hard to get was.
Yeah.
You know, like, hard to get is like this stupid thing that people who don't want to be deeply connected do. right?
Right.
And I want to be deeply connected. And so if that's what I want, then why would I play hard to get? You know? And so moving forward, I made myself way too available, like completely. And he told me one day, he said, you know, you really are making yourself too available. And he's a little older than me, my husband. And I was like, what does that even mean? I was like, does that mean I've done something wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I think what it made me feel like is that, like, all of me was not accepted. Like, if I knew how I felt about something in the moment, that it was too much, there wasn't space for it, and it made him feel like I was I think probably I was triggering him in some way.
Right.
Like smothering him.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, maybe there's not a lot of space for expressing our emotions in our culture in general. I mean, people right. kind of are shut down from, hey, if you're having a bad day, you're having a good, oh, everything's great. Especially when you're in that sort of show business culture and everybody's faking it mm-hmm. and everybody's
yeah,
pretty much full of shit all the
everybody's
time.
Everybody's... we are paid to fake it.
Yeah, you're paid to be like, I'm having the greatest, oh, just whatever emotion you want. Just yeah. tell me what emotion
so
it is.
So where's the line, right? How do you...
Right, so being genuine, and that was kind of part of what I wanted to talk to you about, was so fascinated about in speaking with you the other day, is just this idea of how do you maintain that sense of being genuine, or how are you, you know, being... really genuine mm-hmm. in such a sort of fake it till you make it fake culture of like show business, you know, which, I mean, I know there's a lot of that out there, and I'm not saying everybody in show business is fake or something, but that is sort of a bit of the culture, you know, and that's, it's not always instantly embraced, right? The genuine.
So, first of all, yeah, so this is like getting to the green mistakes, kind of what you're saying is like, so I was genuine. I told them exactly who I am, how I see myself, what shows I see myself on. was gonna have a meeting with them. And then like the next day they send me a thing and they're like, we're letting you go. And I'm like, oh shit. You mean I asked for what I wanted. And I told you that I know who I am, but your ego is telling you that I'm telling you what to do, and you can't get the fuck out of your way because the industry is dictating to you that you're not doing your job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if your client, who is brand new, is telling you who she thinks she is as an actress, you know? And I asked them for the reason, and they said, oh, because we need you, we think you need to go get 6 months of acting classes, intensive training, and feel free to come back to us in 6 months. This is right after I shot The Vow, okay? And I was like, wow. I was so bummed. I was so let down. I mean, my little like child self was like, you really fucked up.
Yeah.
You know? And, but I have the awareness to know, thank God, now that I could like mother myself in that moment and say, dude, I got you, girl. You didn't do anything wrong. That's about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not living an illusion. You're not,
yeah.
You know, people are telling you that your work is very impactful and you're being validated right and left. It's just, these aren't, this isn't your tribe.
Do you believe in like, what do I want to say, serendipity or things that guide you, like coincidence? I mean, you being here.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is a sort of a guiding force and kind of that in the industry a little bit? I mean, things aligning, timing, those kinds of things?
Oh, yes. Timing. It's like a relationship, right? It's like, the most powerful, electric creative affair you have with these people. You know, it's, this is how I describe it. Like, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm just like networking my ass off, right? I'm talking to people who are just like really like showrunners, and like they're in positions that I would just die for them to call me up and be like, yeah, just to get an audition for this is a shot. You know what I mean? And I know I would rise to the occasion 100%. But the thing is that it is like a coincidence thing. Not a coincidence thing. It's like a love affair. It's like there's an energy with creatives where we are all seeking something so vulnerable, which is to craft and or to express ourselves. And then we're all coming to the table with all these wounds. So the way we express ourselves or the way we craft is a delicate balance. Mm-hmm. And finding your tribe, finding your community where there is no fakeness, right? It's an enduring process.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's really, I mean, it's almost like you're constantly speed dating.
You know what I mean? Yes, it's like, I thought about this today, actually. It is literally like a creative experience before you get to actually live as the actor. So it's a creative experience, the business side of it too. Mm-hmm. And it's an affair you have with these people because you literally fall in love with the notion that they could help you win. I mean, that is fucking wild if you really put yourself in that shoe.
Yeah.
Right?
I love that. And I actually, when I was in music and I was spent some time in LA too.
Yeah. The actor in doing, you.
Yeah. And I got involved in acting and stuff. I was actually in a couple of indie films. I just had, for me, it was tough separating myself from the character because I got too into it.
Yeah, I know.
Think
you
that,
told me
when that maybe
the deep
was
end.
Yeah, that maybe was a little. But one of the things I noticed just being in industry and like when, you know, when I was allowing my music career to kind of start to take hold was it was all about almost it's going to sound a little weird, but it's all about attraction. Like I would just be attracted to these certain people and that they would just, I would meet people and I'd be like, oh man, like, I don't know, this guy is just, there's something about this guy. I just want to call him and hang out. I don't even know what the deal is.
Totally.
And I when I met my guitar player, in fact, the guy who eventually joined the band, and I met him just at an event, and like we were hanging out outside on the sidewalk for like 5 minutes, and I was like, dude, do you play music? Because I'm just feeling a vibe with you. And I said to him in the first 5 minutes of us hanging out, like, we're going to play music together. I just know it. And he ended up joining the band and being, you know, part of the band for years. But it was always that kind of feeling. And eventually I realized that, you know, at first I got confused by it because I felt this sort of attraction to people. Mm-hmm. But I realized it was just, I don't know, something like my spirit just pulling me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because it would just be one thing leading to another. So it was really just a series of those kind of attractions that were sort of pulling me forward.
Yeah. It's like there's an energy that we are seeking in each other. You know, it's like we want to get something from the other person, but we don't have an agenda.
Yeah.
Like it's not like there's no malice, there's no roadmap. It's just, it's like you bump into someone and it's like when you were at the piano and you were playing.
Yeah.
And then you saw me and then I started dancing. And it's, there were no words spoken, but I was just like living my best life and you started to live your best life on the piano. And then it's just a creative affair starts to happen.
I love that. That's really,
you know,
this is what I call the flow state. I mean, that's what people call the flow state, right?
Yeah.
And do you
I live for it?
That's what the whole thing is.
And then when I saw you having so much fun and just freaking like, just like, yeah, like Jerry Lee Lewis, you know what I mean? Like, and then it gives me permission energetically to even like be more goofy and silly. And so that's the thing that like I really want to do when I go on set. I want that state to always exist and keep that sacred. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I love that so much. Just creating that space where you're sort of allowed to enter into the flow. So when you're in that moment on set and all the cameras are on, the lights are on, everyone's looking, you're doing your thing, does that all disappear for you? Do you just get so into, I mean, like, do all the lights and cameras and everybody just kind of disappear? Do you just get so into the experience of the moment, or are you kind of aware of it all at the same time? Is it?
So it really depends. I mean, it really depends on like the commitment to of the role that I have, right? The commitment to the role that I have. So is it very much a role that's comedy, right? If it's comedy, you kind of lose yourself a lot more. If the director allows you to play more, there can be some improv. You know, you don't have to be spot on with the lines. When it comes to like a really emotional scene, I myself make that person in front of me the most important person. Whoever I am working with is the most important person.
Right.
And I mean, I think there's, I mean, that's, you look at television and you like you just see like half-ass craftsmen, I call them. Like, they're not truly, truly engrossed in the commitment to the character. But I mean, streaming is like the new way of doing
things.
Well,
I mean, there's so much content out there now,
it's
too.
Insane. It's and insane, and like anybody can make produced. Anything. And that's great. Everybody's winning, right? But for the people like myself who really want to do the work and honor the work and don't ever want someone to tell me that I'm a good actor, I only want them to look at my work and have their mouth drop wide open. That's it. I don't want words. I don't need validation. I just want them to be like, and then I want them to have like thought-provoking feelings about my work.
Do you think about that? Is that a motivation for you? Like other people's reaction to your work, or is it?
Is that a motivation for me?
Like, because I know you said for you, you really want to have that impact.
Yeah, so I find, we were talking about vulnerability. So I find when I am vulnerable, it's like my deepest wisdom is speaking to me. It's like there is something in myself that is like, this is who you are, and this is your gold, and you don't need to be interesting. You are interesting enough, right? So when I arrive there at that place, it is just, it's that flow state where, yeah, the cameras can be there and the crew can be moving around, but like the set and what is happening to me and the direction I'm receiving, I am in character. And a lot of people don't do it that way, you know? And a lot of people think the way I do it's crazy. And it is very exhausting the way I do it, by the way.
Oh yeah.
I can't move like for a couple days when I get home sometimes. You know, I cannot move.
Is it physical exhaustion, or it's like emotional as well?
It's a combination.
Yeah.
But I literally feel like I'm wearing like a weighted vest.
I think what happened
to
me.
And you get depressed, by the way.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like real creatives.
Right.
We get depressed.
It's part of the process.
It's a fucking sad thing. it is so hard.
I had this experience because I was inspired to get involved in film, and I had done play acting, you know, on stage and stuff, and I loved doing that. But I got inspired to get into film, and then I played this role where I was this Vietnam like vet who kind of lost his shit basically, and I was like doing drugs and And all my friends were trying to help me out, but they couldn't, you know, I was like a lost cause. And then there was I was like the supporting actor, the main character. He was sort of going through his, you know, almost, he was basically trying to avoid the draft and didn't mm-hmm. know if he should go to the war. And I had already come back and I was all messed up. So it was kind of, you know, this set in the 60s film or whatever. And anyway, I ended up losing my shit in a bar, and I like threw this like the female lead against the wall, and then the bouncer tried to throw me out, and I almost like punched him in the face because I was like really in character, you know. and I it was crazy because I remember I woke up a couple days after the end of the filming, and I was like feeling so horrible, like I felt so guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all this shame about it, and I didn't even realize it was like a misplaced energy. Like it was almost like I had this emotion that I couldn't really place. Like,
mm-hmm.
and then I realized it wasn't me. It was like this character that I was holding on to, and it was what the character resembled. All these people that had experienced that, and I was like holding on to all this energy of all these sort of people in the past that had gone to war and experienced this kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're such an immersive
person. And I was
person.
A little bit too, yeah, maybe too empathic
mm-hmm.
or something. So I kind of, that steered me away from it. After that experience, I was like, I don't know if I can, like what happens if I get like cast in a role where I'm like a murderer or something? Like, I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah.
I'd be like, it'd be too intense for me.
Did you see a Blackbird?
No, I haven't seen that one. I do love movies though.
Oh my God, he's like my favorite. No, Blackbird is with Paul Hauser, and he just won the Oscar for best supporting or lead or supporting. Oh my God, I can't.
Wait, aren't the Oscars in a couple weeks though?
The Emmy? I don't know.
See, one of them, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a SAG Actor Award, I don't believe.
Maybe Golden Globe or something. I don't know when those
okay.
came out.
But he's just phenomenal, and I've been trying to blow him up on IG. I'm like, you're so fucking phenomenal.
I mean, I love that stuff. Like Christian Bale, like is one of the. I mean, he's one of those guys that gets so into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love really good actors, and I think it is when you can tell the difference with the craft. You know, when people are all the way in it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they get that all the way in it, and I think that was. That's the way I would have had to go. But I chose music instead, which,
mm-hmm.
You know, being a musician, it's all about being genuine. That's the mm-hmm. whole thing. So so for me, that was kind of the path. But I've always been fascinated by films and storytelling, and I have a couple of screenplays that I'm working on myself. But
you are?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
I do. I have a comedy, and I have a like another epic sort of like hero tale, not really a hero, but I have a, it's like my misfit superhero version. Cause I think all the superhero movies are so like over formulaic.
Oh my God.
And
it's crazy what's happening right now though.
The hero journey has just been so overly overplayed that it's just getting so boring. And I'm really into like changing that story up. So that's like one of my dreams to do that.
That's so cool. Shoot for the stars.
Yeah. I love it.
So, do you teach your kids to shoot for the stars?
You know, I teach my kids to just follow what feels really good for them and to try to listen to their own guidance. I think one of the things that we take away from our kids for too long, especially mm-hmm. when they're young, is their own choice, their choices.
Agency.
Yeah, their own agency.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to make their choice and accept their own consequences. So
mm-hmm.
I try to talk to my kids a lot about that. You know, what's going to happen if you do this, you know, and what do mm-hmm. you think the consequence should be? So rather than mm-hmm. making punishments punitive, try to make it like a co-creative, you know, hey, don't you think you deserve to be punished for doing that? Like, doesn't that feel like something that you did wrong? And that's kind of my conversation I have with my daughter, you know? I'm like, what do you think is a good punishment for this?
Oh, because, yeah, it's so funny. We don't even use the word punishment in our house.
Yeah, well, that's good, too. I mean, that's another style.
I let my children, like, openly curse.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little maybe too far. But
they can't curse at me, but they can express themselves.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, you know.
It's like,
I think curse words are just stupid. Anyway, like, that we have this, I don't know. you need to use words and language to express yourself. And if you're being blocked in some way to express yourself, it doesn't seem fair, you know?
Yeah.
But especially for kids, they have a hard time expressing their emotions. Sometimes it's
big time.
Something they can't even say. And even as adults, we have, it's like whatever.
Don't have the words.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to act like the words are, it's so easy as a child. I remember, I don't know about you, but do you remember when you were a kid feeling like nobody understood you anyway? And so like, why would you even try to like save your ass, if you will, you know, and like tell the truth about something, because it's like, they wouldn't really understand anyway. I remember that thread as a kid, that through line in like being a teenager. And I'm like literally starting to live that with my oldest daughter now.
How old's your oldest?
12.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she is like a fucking cat. It's on her terms. I mean, it's wild.
Yeah. I can relate. I mean, I can relate. Yeah, it's tough. I had actually an amazing guest on, and you should listen to the podcast with Jory Rose. She's a mindfulness educator, and she talked a bit about mindfulness with parenting. So she gave me some pointers early on that I kind of held on to, but even in that episode, she talked more about, you know, how to kind of allow, almost becoming a partner to your child for, you know, rather than being against them, sort of like on their side.
Yeah.
And just saying, okay, well, how can, you know, oh, that sucks what you're experiencing, or, oh, you did this bad thing, and that's a bummer, you know, how are we going to fix that? Or how, what are you going to do now, you know, as opposed to kind of, we tend to flare up and take it personally and be triggered by our own kids and that kind of thing. So anyway, I mean, that is a challenging thing right now too, because there's so many distractions in a way, and there's so many things that maybe it feels good, but maybe you're just hiding from the thing, you know. It's like, well, I just want to do what feels good. Well, what feels good? Well, I just want to sit on my phone and play this game. It's like, really? Is that really feeling that good? You know, let's try to
It's like a synthetic, it's like that synthetic dopamine connection, right? That just continues to like hijack the brain system. Yeah. Like the children do not learn to regulate themselves.
Yeah.
I think for me, I grew up in a home where my parents would have these intense fights, freakouts, whatever the hell you want to call them, breakdowns. And the gift that I got was that I watched them come back together and repair it in front of my eyes. So I got context for the breakdown, and I had a really tender relationship. I have a really tender relationship with my dad, where like I could kind of ask him like, you know, what were you guys fighting about or whatever? And it's like he somehow said it in an age appropriate way that gave me context enough so I didn't feel like I was left out of the family system. And so I think what happens a lot with children is, well, first of all, parents, right? We're just like, somehow we're fucking parents like overnight.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's just nuts, It's just the most painful responsibility ever. And it offers the most joy. So you're like, okay, I'm gonna take care of this human being. Oh shit, I'm a human being too. I don't even know how to take care of myself, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what happens is we shield our children from everything that life has to offer us. And as we've learned, right, the stuff in life that's really hard and affects us adversely is the stuff, if we're willing to push through and lean into and move through it, on the other side is so much freedom.
Yeah, there's actually science behind that, that people that have a hardship in their life tend to have more resilience. And actually, can tend to have the ability to be more successful when things, you know, or to push through when things are tough,
yes.
as long as they kind of find something to go for, you know?
Resolve is...
So that's, there is some truth in that, you know? And Tony Robbins has this interesting saying, like, cycle, where he says, you know, really good times produce really, like, weak people, which produce really hard times, but that produces really strong people, which produce really good times. And it's sort
that's
of this cycle of, and you can kind of look at that culturally, too, or historically, you know, as, like, through, like, war, times of war and all this stuff, you know, it creates all these people that are really, you know, make all this money and create all this wealth and all this stuff. But then you have this wealthy time where everybody gets, you know, kind of lazy and turns into, like, some weak people. So... It's a thing. It's hard to fabricate that for our kids, though. You know, it's hard to like fabricate hardship. You can't really do that. But I think what we can do is,
you can
is
give
create
them
challenges and create like, hey, let's challenge this. Let's create these challenges. Can we? Can you challenge yourself to do that? You know, and that's the kind of guidance I try to give my kids even now. I mean, you know, whenever I see an area where they're maybe struggling or, and, you know, create like little sort of, I don't know, guides along the way. Like, okay, well, let's try to take one step. You know, what's one step we can take? Let's challenge ourselves to do this for this week. And then next week, you know, we'll challenge ourselves to take the next step. And I mean, that's how I live my life too. I mean, you know, we can't pressure ourselves even creating this podcast, you know, it was kind of like, a scary thing to do in a way. It was a scary thing to get out there and but now that I'm doing it I feel so inspired by it.
Yeah.
And so we're learning, you know, every time we do it, we're learning a little bit more and how to do it better
and you're like nurturing a part of yourself that is essential to your growth.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, I told my husband, like, when I came back from being on set and this role just fell into my lap because the actress got COVID and, like, I just got lucky that I was available and this guy remembered me and, like, it literally, my groceries in my bag from Trader Joe's and I got this message in my minivan and I was like, I'm a stay-at-home mom. What? I don't even know, like, I've only been in the rooms before, and it just, like, serendipitously happened. And I told my husband after I went to set, I was like, I can't not do this. And it's exactly that. It's like we are nurturing ourselves, if we are lucky, back to, like, you know, like, closer to who we are instead of like that self-fragmented self, right? Who's like the people pleaser who, as a child, you know, so many of psychiatrists talk about this, like where we do this thing where as a child, if our main caregiver, right, is not able to maybe see us for, you know, who we are, or we ruffle their feathers, or we trigger them. And then we get wind of that as a child. We don't have words for it, though. But what we do have is an ability for the animal brain to say, well, she is my caregiver, or he is my caregiver, so I'm going to change myself and self-fragment so that the person in the jungle will not leave me alone. Because they have the milk, you know? And as children, we need to be seen, soothed, safe, and secure.
I don't know if we can ever really shelter our kids from those issues. You know, those things are gonna happen anyway. We can definitely do our best, but it comes in however it comes. I mean, for me, I was really good at math and I taught myself how to read and all these things.
Oh, wow.
And I always had this ability to learn from a really young age. I was really gifted with, they called me gifted with academics. But what I realized, and in part from doing this podcast and just all the reading and is that actually that was all an escape for me. And I never really enjoyed it that much.
Isn't that wild?
And that I was doing, like, I was really good at math and all this stuff because that was my way of escaping from, because I had a pretty crazy household with my family and stuff, and that was my way of kind of escaping.
So you were disassociating.
I was disassociating.
Yeah.
And I've been disassociating ever since. Oh. That was my method. I would shut down, walk away. I would, you know, dig myself into a book or into a really tough problem that was really hard to solve.
And, yeah.
And that's where I disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I got really good at it.
I mean, that's so, but, I can see you like being so emotional about that. What's the emotional part about that? Because like, you're talking to someone who had, is there any water in
here?
Yeah,
we need some water.
I'm like dying over here.
Yeah, Mike, can we get some water?
Is this, mushrooms?
I don't know, it's a really good, I mean.
I see you're on the brink of like discovering it for yourself. I'm really curious.
I don't know. I think it's
hot as shit in here, by the way.
It is fucking hot. We turned off the AC because it's loud in the background. I'm gonna maybe take this jacket off. But anyway, I don't know. I think it's just it's this shutdown that I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just feel like I don't feel regrets about it or anything like that. I actually just feel amazed at the human ability to sort of self-regulate in a way, like,
well, disassociating, you know,
it's a way to
self-regulate.
A way of how we deal, kind of, and it's and it was like, it was cool that I went that route in a way. I mean, that I got really into problem solving and
math,
and
I
think it came from playing games with my sister and playing games with my mom, and it was just this happy space for me. So it went from playing games to, you know what, I'm going to figure out how to read, to, you know what, I'm just going to read the whole encyclopedia because that's what we had, to, you know what, I'm just going to keep going. And it's this sort of go-to, you know? And I think what it feels like, it was my escape. I don't know. It's almost like a drug. It was almost like, wow, I got to get off this drug. Like, how do I do that?
Mm-hmm. Did you have when you realized like how, like what your behavior was and like where it came from, did you have like withdrawal?
Yeah, I think I'm going through it now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm still kind of like, I just want to, like I do this thing where I play chess,
mm-hmm.
and it's totally just because I'm like, shutting down. It's like I like chess, but I'm not like I love chess.
No,
you know,
yeah.
It's just sort of I do it because it gives me a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a blocker from all the things that I'm nervous about, or from, you know, taking the next steps in my other areas of life,
mm-hmm.
That I'm kind of like nervous about. Mm-hmm. And so I recognize it. And
I used to do that actually with TV. I feel like when my kids were younger, I had a TV addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I would like after like dinner, like it's so sad. Like, I mean, fuck. Like I would like turn on the television and watch like 4 hours of TV every single night. And my husband's like, you know, what is going on here? But he grew up in a home where his thing was he would disassociate because of his stuff that was going on in his home.
Mm.
And so me doing this to him was not unfamiliar to his nervous system. So he never sought me out. So we just kind of like...
You both checked out from each other in a way.
Well, yeah. Well, I was checking out because of what you're speaking about. I was checking out because I was too overwhelmed with what to do next, a feeling unsettled, not living up to my potential. This is before I went back to acting.
Yeah.
And I think I would say that I got addicted to, I mean, probably watching all that television like was a resurgence into like all the training I did in New York 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you there's a, I mean? There's a bit of it that is studying the acting and yeah. looking really closely at the storylines and the
yeah.
I think there's a bit of both, right? I mean,
yeah.
But I think we all struggle with that in a way. I mean, we all struggle with that feeling of like not being good enough, or maybe you have a dream that feels too far away, too impossible, or you have a thing that you really want to do that. You know, well, I'll never be able to do that or whatever. Mm-hmm. We shut ourselves down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've realized is it feels good to take the step. One thing that came to me recently is, you know, we always talk about goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you have your goals. What are your goals? And I started to, I realized that I have a problem with that.
Mm.
Like, I don't want to call them goals.
Okay.
And what I started to call them now is destinations.
Oh, okay.
Because I like the journey. It's all about a journey.
Yeah.
And you don't know exactly how you're going to get there. There's no exact roadmap to your destination. But
right.
You know it's there.
Right.
You know it exists on planet Earth somewhere. It
is
there.
The journey.
But it's all about the journey.
It is.
And if you
this
don't,
is it.
If you
this
don't
is like
take the
our
steps,
best life now.
This is it. We're doing it.
Yeah.
And I feel that.
Yeah.
I feel
deeply.
That.
Deeply.
I feel that deeply.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what feels so inspiring, you know, having you here.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being here. This is what inspires me.
Yeah.
Knowing that we can find this flow.
Yeah.
And then we can help other people find their flow. Because if we were all flowing like that,
we'd be
man,
a flow cast.
This play would be a, yeah.
Fucking podcast.
Fucking flow cast. We're
flow
not even.
Cast.
No,
this,
I'm not. I don't
this
do a podcast.
This is not a fucking podcast.
It's a fucking,
flow cast, people. I mean, shit.
Yeah, man. That is what it is.
But, and you know what's really beautiful about you, Bear, is honestly, I imagine, because I did it probably when I met you. I'm not really conscious of it, but like how we look at people in life and we judge them like that.
Yeah.
And we don't see their wounds right away because we work so hard to hide them.
Yeah.
You know? And you're a man and you're available to what is going on. Like, yeah, you shut down, but to have the words and to give the context of what's going on to another individual, like, that is not what a lot of men learn.
We don't.
You know, you don't get that nurturing that's like, so valuable when it comes to truly connecting with another human being and not seeing me as a woman, but seeing me as a human being. Because I'm literally no different from you, right? You're no different from me. And like, that's the part that we work so hard is to try to push ourselves away from each other to show each other how different we are. And like,
there's that classic sort of male character in a movie, or it's almost like a device. I feel like
mm-hmm.
that screenplay writers go to all the time, where it's like you get right to that moment where they have to share something very intimate, very vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
and they just can't.
Yeah,
you know, they come. I think it happens. To people, I think there's like actually a word for it in psychology where it's like you can't get over this wall. Like you get to this point and you're like, I'm gonna tell them. And then you get right there and you just freeze. You freeze. You just can't
mm-hmm.
say it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they use it all, right? It's always like, oh, I was just about to tell you this thing and then I just want to tell you I love you. But then all of a sudden all this stuff happens and I can't tell you anymore. But I think that is sort of like, it's happening to everyone.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Where we're unable to get vulnerable.
Yeah.
We're unable to get real emotional. And I think there's quite a bit of strength in vulnerability.
Oh, it's
you know,
it's
I think
unreal. I try to tell my husband this. Like, I mean, I literally, you know, it's really fascinating what you're saying right now because, like, Jesus, like, I realized that, like, I was always putting all my attention on him and, like, the shit he needs to fix. And I get that from, like, watching a mother who would scrutinize and be critical because she came from that herself, right? Yeah. So all this learned, you know, multi-generational trauma,
our
right?
DNA yeah. and stuff. Yeah.
It's, I mean, we're just carrying bags of it around like fucking groceries. We can't even get rid of it if we try.
No.
Until you have the awareness. And I came to find out that if I was working this hard and putting so much attention on him and all of the things that are not working, that are affecting me, that I am reactive to, then what if I were to just turn it around and look at myself and say, you know what, he actually can't even heal, Megan, this so-called journey that you think he needs to heal from, right, or yeah. what he's come from, because you are holding his fucking nuts in your hands like a resentful fucking mother. And that's what I learned about myself. And it's been a very recent discovery that I didn't know that all of my upset or anger or resentment or the shit that we had been through, that I was holding on to it so tight, like wearing it like it was like part of my uniform. And like, I should have honor that I'm carrying it around. But what I was doing is the very thing that I was doing is I was pushing, the thing that I wanted is I was making it further and further away. Because yeah. all the, if someone feels resentment or anger or upset or I don't know, disconnection from you, right? You're someone you're in an intimate relationship, the last thing they're gonna do is go closer to you. You know?
Yeah.
And so when I released all of that, it wasn't because like I knew that he could heal if I released it. It was because my children were watching me live that life of not truly being able to be honest with myself.
Yeah.
That I play half the part in this fucked upness, right?
Yeah, and we hold each other in these stories.
Oh, yeah.
We hold each other in the same story maybe that happened 5 years ago or whatever, but now
oh, yeah.
we you know, we project that story into the future, but that's oh, not yeah. necessarily... And now you've changed your story. Now you're changing your story, and you've changed it dramatically.
Yeah.
And now things are changing for you in your life, and you're getting all these roles, and you're yeah. out there doing what you really love.
Yeah.
And now you have an opportunity to take all that you've learned
yeah.
in that sort of emotional roller coaster, right? To and apply it into a creative oh. art that is helping other people to see how all those emotions, right?
I mean, well, so that's just, we're just really all so valuable, Bear. That's yeah. the thing. We're all so valuable, and we don't need to think that it has to be just one way to be valuable. You know,
there's this really amazing. I've totally changed it from its original thing, but there was this yeah. article in New York Times the other day from this author, and she was talking about kind of how she went through a little depression, and then she found her joy in these really small things.
Yeah.
And she was talking about like just like a little insect that if you look really closely, like how beautiful they are and how amazing it's like engineered and it's like little wings, and she was just getting fascinated by these little things. And she wrote something like, now I find just pure joy in the way the sun comes through the window and glances on top of my coffee cup mm-hmm. in the morning or something mm-hmm. like, just these little moments.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that we hold ourselves in this light of, well, you have to be this big thing. And you're
oh,
gonna,
yeah.
And then we miss the joy.
I know.
In the light dancing off the coffee cup or just the little insect. And how this little insect suddenly changed her life is just a sign of it doesn't matter how big or how small, doesn't matter where you are or where you show up. if you show up as your genuine self,
yeah,
it's going to have some sort of impact. It's going to help somebody. And so that's getting that, being a little bit vulnerable or being real, you know, being real.
And like, there's that quote, I don't know who says it, but it's the one thing that is certain in life is always, there's only one thing in life that is certain, and it's, do you know what it is?
It's change.
No.
Well,
it's the unknown.
Well, that too.
It's the unknown, right? And be willing to have the unknown unfold and not think like that whole thing, like that the storm will go on forever. You know, the sun will come out again.
Yeah, that's why I like thinking about it as a destination, because when I was sort of traveling and, you know, on the sort of path of serendipity,
yeah,
it wasn't really about, like you're saying, wasn't about arriving there. And once you get there anyway, you just come up with a new destination. It was about the journey, and it was about trusting that I would be guided there somehow. Mm-hmm. That somehow, as long as I kept stepping, mm-hmm. and as long as I tuned in and said, okay, well, what's the next step?
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step? And then just take that step. What's the next step? Take that step.
Speaking of take the next step, that is another part of being in the flow state, is attuning yourself to another person. So it's a very selfless way of being, and it's a very, it almost surpasses vulnerability, because vulnerability, I feel like, is like this action you have to take to be vulnerable. Like, not for me, but often I think a lot of people struggle with it, you know? But when you attune yourself to someone, what you're doing is you're running like a little, you know, laser surfacer over there, and being like, okay, over here, they had a long day. Down here, they got a bad phone call. You know, over here, like, they're sore from trying to act like they're young and they're not. You know, down here, their feet hurt.
Are you talking about me right now? Because I feel like, did you just do that to me, or was it
that silly conversation in the beginning? It's fine.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
No, but listen, it's like when you attune.
Well, listening, maybe, like, the art of listening. I would think of it as.
Yes. Okay. Listening, but attunement is like you are almost offering. Like, you're like, I can help to regulate you. So that's something that, you know, I really value, is when I find someone who, and maybe you feel the same way, where like you're sharing a story or something's happening or there's a breakdown or whatever, and that person can like just, yes, listen, but they can hold the space for you to have the experience.
Yeah.
Right? And there's no judgment.
Make you feel safe.
And there's curiosity in it. Like,
yeah.
It's called, my therapist, she says it, it's called being in the state of O. And so it's like, you're talking to me and there's whatever, and I'm like, oh. You know, no matter what it means to me personally, even if I don't agree with you, it's like, oh, you know. And just being really curious of how, mm-hmm. and when I do that for someone, I'm offering them my energy that's helping to regulate them. So it's a support, right?
That's beautiful, yeah.
And I think a lot of times there's tools that are available to us. And when you, teenagers, I should start listening in the state of O to my teenager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's not a teenager, she's a tweenager, or whatever the hell that means.
Well, it's coming. It's right around the corner. I mean, it's pretty much there. I have a 12-year-old too, and she's gonna be, yeah, wow, 13 in August. So, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
That was crazy.
We're flow casting.
We're flow casting. And I think as a closer, like, I was thinking of what you were saying about tuning in, and I'm just really curious, like, when you're in the moment, when you're in the flow on the set, and I would put you back in that, in your craft, when you're really flowing and you're feeling the energy.
Yeah.
Are you genuinely listening to the character, like to the other characters as they're, you know, are you like, how do I want to say it? Like how much of it, you know what I mean? Because a lot of times you're like thinking about what you're going to say next. I feel like most people when they're listening, they're really just thinking about what they're going to say next. Do you know what I mean?
No, I don't know. And that is one of the biggest areas of contention in my relationship was figuring out that there was, and I don't know if this is a guy thing. Is this a guy thing? I don't know. You guys tell me. But it's like, I don't think like that. Like when you ask me a question, I answer and then I hear what you're saying and then maybe it prompts a thought. But what am I going to say next? No, absolutely not. So that's a guy thing.
I love how you just summarily call that a guy thing. What I'm more thinking of is like, when I in the music flow, so I'm comparing it to like being in the music flow.
Okay.
When I was really in the flow with music.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the flow with music, I'm not really thinking about what I'm playing. I'm just in a state of pure listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's almost like I'm just listening for the song that I know is coming. But I'm not really conscious of like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm playing this chord, or I'm playing this chord, or, you know, oh, I got to hit that note or whatever. You're not really, you know, and I found that if I fell out of that somehow,
yeah,
like, cause you fall out of it too. You're like, I would be like doing this crazy guitar solo.
That's terrible. I'm a faker. Yeah. I hate myself. I'm not an artist.
The thing that's tough is like when people like you'd be like, dude, having this great moment. You're like
riffing.
Yeah, and then you see the crowd, and they're like, woo! And then you're like, yeah. And then you're like, meow! Like that. You screw it up right in that moment, because it takes you out of the flow. Like you see the crowd, yeah. And now and you're like, yeah, I'm so awesome. And then you're like, and I was studying that moment. Like, wow, that's interesting how that happens. Like whenever I became self-aware. Mm-hmm. Of what I was actually doing.
Oh.
Or I'd be like, oh, wow, I can't believe I'm really up here rocking this huge stage.
But that's it.
I would suck right in that moment really bad.
But that's because you're self-aware, right?
So I'm trying to understand what that experience is like as an actress. Do you have that? Do you have that happen to you?
Yeah, you like third eye yourself.
You see yourself from outside yourself or something. Like you're like,
yeah, you're like, I don't believe the shit I'm saying anyway. Like I should just stop and start over. Yeah, I just like fucked up this audition, you know.
Right. And that's silencing that. How do you silence that?
That's okay. Do you believe in muscle memory?
Yeah.
I can't believe how this mushroom water is about to go.
Mm. We're mm-hmm. Yeah.
So real quick, this is how I feel. Real quick. Muscle memory is teaching your body, right? What does it say? Joe Dispenza says neurons that fire together.
Wire together.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Neurons that wire together.
Fire together.
Okay. So, how I see it is, it's a craft, right? So you have to train your instrument to be in all the ways, no matter what. So, lights, camera, crew, shit, blocking cranes, whatever's falling around, right? I have to be reliable. And if I pump that muscle every day and I train that muscle, and that firing, that wiring, then guess what? Thank you. Then I am gonna have an instrument that's reliable, right? So yes, the way I make that moment not show up a lot is by doing that, is by being a crazy craftswoman and just like making my instrument so fucking reliable that you can just try to shake me in a gumball machine, but I will come out like blowing your socks off.
I love it.
You know?
There's a quote from Charlie Parker that he says, yes, study music. Become a master at music. Learn all of the music chords. Learn all of music theory. And then just forget all that shit and play.
Yes. that's Helen Mirren says the worst thing you can do to tell an actor who already has raw talent is different, right? I mean, there are actors who are on TV who are trained and they've learned, but they do not have raw talent, and there's a real difference. But they love it just as much, probably. They just weren't born with maybe the raw talent of exploration, right? Because characterization is about exploration. But is that, don't tell somebody with raw talent to go to an acting conservatory. It's the worst thing you can do. Because you're unwinding their instrument that's already raw and alive, and you're teaching them how to put borders and parameters around it. And it's so true. It's like, if you have raw talent, then just get out there and do fucking open mics.
Just work.
Yeah. And just like get in the vibe and attune yourself to other musicians and artists and have that fucking love affair with all those creatives. And do it boldly and don't look back, because you get one fucking chance. That's one thing I do know. When I hit 40, I was like, this is it. I don't know, something happened. It was like, I got to do something that's super fulfilling now, you know?
And every time, every audition, every time you have a chance, this could be the one.
Yeah, and you hear so many actors talk about it all the time. You know, Gosling was saying the most hilarious thing on Instagram the other day. He was doing an interview with, I don't know who it was, like some critic, and basically saying, like, I remember it's like a big fuck you. He's like, you walk into an audition, and before you're even in the room, you hear the casting director speaking to the producer like, yeah, that's our guy. Before you've even gotten into the room. And you just fucking drove an hour and a half, right? With the gas money that you like is only your last like $30, right? And you parked illegally because you didn't want to be late. And you get to the room and you hear the producer, you know, mingling with the casting director like, yeah, that's our guy. But you haven't even had a chance yet, right? He's like, the business is like a big fuck you. So it really is a lot of luck. But if you're willing to put yourself in the pool of luck and, you know, push yourself into all of those frequencies, then luck will find you. I think luck is going to find me. I feel, to be quite honest, I think luck already fucking found me.
Awesome. Like, well, I found you. We found you.
And you guys found me. I'm lucky to be here. This is like...
It's awesome.
I was more nervous coming to this than coming to set, because I have to be just me, right? There's no character to be.
Yeah, there's no preparation. I didn't give you any prep. It was like walking into the unknown.
Walking into the unknown.
All right. Well, maybe we'll call this episode Walking into the Unknown.
I'm all in. I mean, this was so successful.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you so much for being here. Seriously. It's awesome.
All right. Thanks so much to Megan McKenna for joining us in the studio. That was pretty far out, man. That conversation went places I didn't expect it to, but it was cool. Mike and I are just geeking out on this song right now that we just created over here. Thanks so much for tuning in to In the Chair with Bear. Please follow us on Apple and Spotify and put us a review if you can. All right, we'll see you next week. In the chair.